You want to talk about documents? Like, you know, it's sort of mundane, but it's really important on the front end. What's the first thing you do with the?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So one of the very first things you want to do is lock down or figure out exactly what scope of documents you need to lock down, right? I mean, the number one big hole or black hole of an investigation, and what terrifies, I think, a lot of executives at companies is they've heard of the cost just running on, and that if you have an extreme amount of documents to review, that's just going to balloon the budget, which is absolutely correct. I think one of the ways you can deal with that is lock down more than you need, and then only pull what you need to review. And you do that by having a very good scope of the investigation when you start out. We like to run them with what I call concentric circles, where you try to figure out or ring fence. The first questions are, what do I need to know to answer the question in front of me right now and get the correct answer? And at that point, then you can start to figure out what custodians to look at, what departments to look at, what documents to look at. Now, if something comes up in that investigation, in that particular review or what you're doing, then you go back to the audit chair or whoever you're reporting to and say, look, we need to expand in a little bit more of a concentric circle. We now need to talk to this person or do that or do this. If you've locked down the universe of documents, then you can answer the question at the beginning that we're pretty certain we don't lose anything because we put in the litigation holds. We locked down the documents. We saved the universe of materials. But I can tell you, if you pull it, the government and or the audit firm, the forensic shadow team, is going to ask you why you didn't look at it if you didn't look at it and you pulled it. So one of the ways to keep costs down is to pull only that stuff that you think you need to know to get to the right answer.
And we work with the experts that do the forensics for us a fair bit. I describe it as a funnel. And it's you pick up you get the big batch of documents, and then you work really hard to come up with the right search terms. And you run the search terms, and you run the search terms again. You refine it when there's a bunch of bad hits. And you bring it down to a funnel to get to a spot where you say, okay, that's manageable. And I'm going to have actual bodies look at those. And you may hire contract lawyers because to keep it cheaper if it's a huge amount. You might do it with your own lawyers. You might, you know, use some of the forensic people's people. But the objective is to make sure you've got everything, define the scope, be relentless about always revisiting and saying, am I exceeding the scope? Because that's where the costs do escalate, is when you expand scope and don't realize it. And then work that funnel down to a manageable amount of documents. And you know, by the time it hits my desk, it's a binder of hot documents. And that's what then you go work with the witnesses and the interviews and things.
Yeah, maybe just a couple of comments from the in-house perspective on the documents. You know, I'm a general counsel, but previously did litigation in-house and was chief compliance officer. Along the way, you have to know enough about your internal IT systems and enough about forensics to be able to help scope, because you have to understand that what can also run up your cost is if you have certain protocols about where emails are stored, and there may be a source that is atypical where you can find them, or perhaps you have certain built-in rules that emails aren't stored after a certain period of time. You have to be able to help that communication or have somebody in your IT group that understands forensics, because that's where you can also spend a lot of time and money. And then really having the people that kind of understand scoping custodians as well. It's important to see those pieces. And I wouldn't want you to learn that the first time with a government investigation, because there is a desire to sometimes be leave nothing standing kind of approach, because that's a belief that would be thorough, and that can be extremely costly and sometimes not really yield anything that's going to actually be very valuable at the end of the day.
I would love to sit up here and tell you, I'm shifting gears a little bit, that you always need to hire Michael or me or somebody like us to do an investigation like this. I don't think it's true. I think that you need to consider a series of factors, and some of that stuff's up on the slide, but really it's, you know, what's at stake? Who's your audience? Do you need independence? I sort of touched on that a little bit ago about, can you use lawyers who already know your company, or do you need to get independence? Do you have somebody that can credibly talk to whoever the audience is, whether it's a regulator, whether it's a plaintiff's lawyer, whether it's the whistleblower, his or herself? What's the best way to credibly deliver an outcome that makes the problem go away? That's really what you're shooting for. You don't always need to hit that with the biggest sledgehammer you can find. I think it's personal. You know, and you talk about your sort of internal process for like an employment whistleblower, and what do you do with that?
Yeah, I think it's really important because you have to understand. I like to talk about beginning with the end in mind. You know, think about what you're solving for. They're going to be. I think John was just talking about the funnel. There's going to be so many issues that are going to come up. Literally, I've had on a an ethics line somebody anonymously saying a person moved their sandwich in the refrigerator. So you're going to handle that very differently than you're going to handle if somebody says that there's an allegation of bribery or fraud, and those are chalk and cheese. So, but you have to have credibility of your program. You have to kind of treat them all in some way so that whoever's calling into your line believes that you are legitimately going to try to address their problems. So we come up with a filtering system, and so the things that are more employment related, we send to typically to HR. Oftentimes they'll be anonymous, and so many of you with your hotlines, you will have the ability to have your hotline vendor go back anonymously and say, would you like to give more information? And sadly, sometimes they simply won't, and you're unable to scope it. But for us, we do a lot of investigation internally, and we always begin with the idea that at some point we may have somebody checking our homework. We don't believe that this is something that needs to be reported externally or that we plan to report externally, but you should always conduct the investigation in terms of the scope, but also the documentation, so that if in the future you have to bring it to light and defend the fact that it was a credible investigation, you're able to do that.